Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your car calls, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Always a popular program when Gordon is here. Do call early. Don't get irritated if you don't make it through. We do the best we can. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email voxpop at wamc.org. Gordon Fricke, your car calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Automotive maintenance repair today with Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, auto body towing, and used car facility. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for decades, and he's always a great guest on this program. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a car question, or you can email voxpop at wamc.org. That's voxpop at wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to Studio A. What'd you drive over in today?
You know, I was thinking about taking something kind of fun, but, you know, the weather's getting colder. The fun factor's out, so I just took a used car from the front lot that needed some exercise.
Oh, very nice. Was it that nice El Camino that I saw?
I sold that.
Did you
really?
Yes,
I did.
Oh,
yep.
Darn it. There goes another dream. You know, let's talk for a minute about electric cars, and I'll explain why. A little embarrassing, but the wife and I were watching TV last night. It wasn't even cable. It was Roku TV.
Yeah.
And there's this show with David Hasselhoff driving his old car from the Knight Rider
that
show.
That was called Kit.
Kit. Right. And it was talking back. It was very annoying. Yeah. I was too old to watch that show at the time. So this is really the first time I had to interact with Kit. So he ends up in a race with Eric Estrada on his old Chips motorcycle.
Was it really Eric riding the bike?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
And he was good. And also the dude from the A-Team in that big van, Dirk Benedict. So anyway, in the lead up to the races, which, by the way, Hasselhoff won. But in the lead up, he went to several places where they had cool cars and cars that were sort of built with this the philosophy that Kit sort of had.
Kit was ahead of his time.
Right.
Yeah, it was a thinking, self-learning. Was Kit autonomous back in those days?
I think it could drive itself.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yeah.
Part of his journey, he went to some of these places where they're making these really high-end electric cars,
yep.
And it blew my mind. There was a robotic electric car that went, I think, 300 miles an hour. Nobody in it, just by itself. And then there was another one that people could get in. It had a full set of amenities. Went 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds.
Well, see, that's the misconception of electric vehicles today by some crowd, you know, maybe the gearheads who are not interested in a quiet electric vehicle, thinking that they're just slowpoke nerd transportation.
Yeah.
I rode in a Tesla S a couple of times, a Tesla Model 3, and we just had a Mustang Mach-E in the shop this morning for winter tires, and I didn't drive it very far, but the acceleration and torque is instant.
Yeah.
You step on that, I don't even know if you call it a gas pedal, it's an accelerator pedal or whatever, but it's just, the torque is amazing. It's there immediately, it throws you back in your seat, and you just hear some whining, you know, just some mechanical sounds. So they're, you know, they have acceleration, and they have power, and they have speed.
Yeah, you know, and the one thing, and maybe I misheard this last night, but we might have had one or two, and so maybe I was not listening as closely as possible, but I thought that the manufacturer of this particular electric car said that it has a 1,500-mile range on a charge. Is that even possible?
I don't know, because range anxiety is the big thing now, right?
Right.
So 300 miles is making people comfortable.
Yeah, or maybe it was 500
miles.
Yeah,
500 I do believe, for sure, because the deal is if you can pack in enough batteries, you can get the range, but the batteries add all the weight.
Right.
And you know, it's just
slow
not
it down.
Practical, but yeah, it's the range. So 500 miles, I bet, for sure.
I think the electric car thing is pretty great.
It's taken a long time to really get rolling, but if you do any, if you check on Elon Musk and Tesla at all, it's amazing what they're doing and how fast they're charging ahead.
I mean, the real problem, of course, is keeping those, getting the costs down where those normal people like us can buy them.
They're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. Cars Today, 800-348-2551 is the number. And we'll start with a few emails that came in before we hit the phones. This one came in quite a while back from Matt in Pittsfield. It's about his 2007 Dodge Ram. Matt writes, "My heat works, but it's stuck. When dial is on heat, it blows the hot air about 70% on defrost and will not change. What can I do?"
Yeah, so that's the mode selector. It's the part of the system that channels the air to different areas of the car, windshield, floor, dash, or mix. And there is a mode control motor, servo motor that changes that mode flap. And I would dare say that motor is stuck. It probably failed. And generally they fail in the windshield defrost position. So you're not stranded without your windshield being clear.
Yeah.
And that's generally not the worst job in the world. But that's what I'm guessing he's got happening there.
All right, fair enough. This one is from Alvin. Alvin writes, 2006 Escape, all-wheel drive, 100,000 miles. About a year and several thousand miles ago, I noticed an uncharacteristic noise in the rear, sort of low amplitude, low frequency, and continuous. A little more apparent when applying gas than when not. Two repair shops said it's coming from the rear differential, advising I replace it. There's no leak. Fluid is full. I've been driving it, as I said, over a year and thousands of highway and local miles. What if I just continue? Is it dangerous? What can happen?
Yeah, that's interesting because gear noise back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, maybe even 70s was apparent because most vehicles were rear-wheel drive,
yeah,
considered a conventional setup in the U.S. So you had a drive shaft, you had a rear differential, all cast iron and steel gears and all that, and they were noisy. And they worked hard to make those gear sets quieter. They called them hypoid gear sets, and they used different fluids. So anyway, if that Escape is making gear noise and the fluid is clean and full, as he states, and the noise is really not changing a lot, I don't think he's in desperate shape where he may have a catastrophic failure. I'm thinking the noise is going to get worse and tell him it's time.
Yeah, 100,000 miles.
Yeah, I would. I think he's all right to keep driving it.
All right, this is from Selena in Northern Westchester. I have a 2020 Audi Q7 3.0, I guess, T. As you probably know, the manual maintenance for oil change every 10,000 miles. I know you don't like waiting that long. Do you think changing oil every 5,000 miles is okay, or every 3,000? My husband is the one that changes the oil, and in the Audi, it's an impressive amount of oil that goes into it. I believe it's 8 liters. Also, do you recommend putting Tecron? Okay, well, this is the second one.
Yeah.
First of all, let's go with the oil change interval for that car.
Yes. So I do advise cutting it in half, doing it at 5,000 miles. And
okay,
that's certainly okay because that does hold a considerable amount of oil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
and
right,
it's high-quality oil.
And stick with the manufacturer's spec on the oil?
You have to, you need to put in the specification that Audi requires. It doesn't have to be oil from Audi. Just has to be meeting
right
those standards.
Okie doke. The second part of Selena's question, do you recommend putting Tecron in the fuel tank after the oil change? Has 17,000 miles right now, so I'm not sure if the fuel additive is needed or not.
It's a good idea to put the additive in every oil change. It's an easy thing to remember and do. And, you can do it right after you change the oil and then just, you know, run that tank full through and wait till your next oil service. So that's a good idea.
Now, I know that you have said in the past that there is a danger. I don't know how much the danger is, but there is a danger of using too much of that additive stuff in one oil change too quickly. What'll happen if you just dump it in every time you fill up?
Well, what it does is the gasoline byproducts get into the crankcase, the oil. It doesn't all get perfectly burned or combusted, and it slips by and gets into the oil. So the fear with the additives like Tecron, the really strong ones, are that if you do too many treatments in a row or between oil changes, you're going to get some contamination in the oil.
Right.
So I think they tell you not to do more than three between oil changes. So, I mean, that's a quite a bit.
Yeah,
so if you did more than that, you know, would it kill the engine? Probably not, but...
It's funny, you know, my truck, and you've seen it probably more than you'd care to see it, takes premium. At least it's recommended
right.
because it's, I guess, a high compression
yeah.
engine. And, you know, I thought the premium didn't have much ethanol. And so I was dubious when I put some of that stuff in and a full bottle and ran it. It seemed to run smoother. What additives, what contaminants is it taking out if it's not the ethanol?
Yeah, the ethanol is really not the culprit here. It's the amount of detergents and cleaners in some gasolines aren't adequate to take away carbon and the deposits from the fuel that bakes onto the intake valves, the pistons, and a lot of it is in the form of carbon,
yeah.
and a lot of it is stickier stuff, and that's what the chemicals in these additives do. They dissolve those deposits, and then they basically burn them. You know, they're done. They go out the tailpipe.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. Cars Today. We'll get to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. We'll try to hit the email bag again before we wrap this show. We have a long way to go. We'll be back. Box Pop on WAMC Cars Today with Gordon Fricke, 800-348-2551. If you have a question, and let's go to the phones. Bob in Broad Auburn. Bob, you're up.
Thank you very much. I have I'll try to be concise.
Okay.
I have a 1987 Jaguar XJ6 that I recently took out of storage. It had been in storage for 15 years. I had both of the 11.5-gallon fuel tanks drained. Everything seemed fine after that. I probably put 50 miles on the car and used up the fuel in one 11.5-gallon tank and began using probably put 20 miles on the other tank. I developed a problem. The car began to sputter. It sounded like it was becoming loud and maybe backfiring, was not responding well to the throttle. I then, on my own, changed the fuel pump, and I was able to open the filler tanks to relieve the pressure to do that. I did notice that on one tank, I heard what sounded like gurgling sound, which made me suspect how could air be in there bubbling up through the gas. I replaced the fuel pump. It would run for probably 7-8 minutes and then do the same thing and misbehave with respect to RPM response, throttle response. I then changed the fuel pressure sensor, and it ran for about 7 minutes, 8 minutes, and then it began to act up again, sounded loud like it was backfiring. I should also mention, by the way, not particularly related to that, but I had to put a battery connector on with the screw type unit so that I could unscrew the power because I had a back light that was on, even with none of the dash switches on. Last night, all of the lights were lit up when I put the power to it, and can't figure out why, except there's a lot of moisture around, and wondering whether I've got a problem with corrosion in the switch. But in any case, my problem is, I think, a fuel air mixture. Is there a place under the dash where they can plug in a meter to check and sense fault and identify the exact problem, or do you suspect an air-fuel mixture problem?
Yeah, so the year of the car was in 86. 87?
Yes.
87?
Yes, yeah. 87 XJ.
Yeah, okay, so that was pre-OBD1 where you could anybody could plug a scan tool in and get some basic information. That happened in the 90s. So what I'm thinking is, unfortunately, Jaguar is going to be the only outlet or a Jaguar specialist that does have diagnostic equipment. You still did have a diagnostic link on that car to plug into, but it's very specific to the vehicle. If you found an older shop that did European cars, they might have a box of adapters. Years ago, we used to have adapters for all these older cars.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty critical to get that thing diagnosed, because you can guess away at a ton of stuff and be wrong, and it gets expensive and time-consuming. One of the things I do always check on a vehicle like that, and I'm not sure how Jag's got that set up, but the intake air boot between, I think that car might have a mass airflow sensor, and if or a mass air
so.
Or a mass air meter.
And
if that car gets what's called wrong air, and that's a leak between the meter and the engine, it will create all of the trouble you're explaining. And a crack in that bellows boot or that air duct can be a little deceptive. You should really inspect all the air ducts and hoses, and you might stumble onto an air leak and be in great shape and solve the whole problem yourself.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Cars Today with Gordon Fricke and Bob in Rotterdam. Bob, you're up.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a 2019 Subaru Forester. I had the oil changed at the dealer before going away for about 3 or 4 days. I'm coming home on the Mass Pike. I'm in the center lane doing about 75, and I pull into a rest area. A guy pulls up and he says, "Your car's smoking so bad, nobody can stay in a lane behind you."
No.
So I get out, and the oil's leaking out of the front of the car. I bend down, and I look, and it looks like there's a shower head under my car with the water coming out of it. It was just oil, like coming out like a shower head. And I didn't see any lights go off on the dashboard before this. I didn't smell any oil burning or anything. And when I shut it off, when he told me this, the first thing I thought of, I'll see if the smoke is coming out. I just revved it, and I heard a little bit of a knock, and I shut it off right away. They towed it to a dealer. They filled it up with oil. I was on my way. I took it in the next day, and everything seems to be all right. The lights aren't on. The car seems to perform just like it did before, but I'm wondering. The dealer didn't want to do anything for me. I got Subaru to make them give me a 7-year, 100,000-mile extended warranty on the car. But I don't know if I should have somebody take the pan off or check the bearing cast and see if the overlay is wiped off of it or not. I don't know what to do. I don't know how long, this could last me a year, could last me 10 years.
Well,
I don't know. What do you?
Where was the leak coming from, just out of curiosity?
Out of the plug. The guy that changed the oil put it in a hand tight. When the dealer over in Massachusetts looked at it, he said it was only on about 4 threads.
Oh, okay. Yep. Did your red oil light come on at the very end of that adventure when it was smoking?
I didn't see anything come on. When I shut it off, I turned it on. I didn't start the engine. I turned it on and said, there was a message, something like, "Do not run the engine," or something. It's low on oil or something like that.
How much, do you know how much oil was left in it when you had it towed in?
I'm sure it was all gone. I mean, my God, the whole parking lot, the state police came and they made the tow truck guy clean up the oil, throw some stuff on. Okay. I mean, it was running right down the, it was probably, I don't know, only takes 4 quarts, so probably 3 were on the ground there, you know?
So the issue is really with the dealer that changed the oil, not Subaru of America, because it was a human error. I know that's not really your question. Your question is, do you trust the car now, even though they gave you that extended warranty? It might be nice if the dealer that changed the oil, is that your local dealer or was that traveling?
Yeah. No, that's a local. Oh, no. Well, we're in Massachusetts when they filled the oil up again.
Who
changed it here? That was local.
Okay. Okay. So maybe you should reach out to the local dealer that changed the oil and unfortunately left the drain plug loose and say, "You're concerned this whole event happened. You're going to live with this car for years. What do we do here?" Mm-hmm. You know, and that's slippery slope, because
sure
you can't just take the engine up. Well, you can take the engine somewhat apart and look up in there, but you're really not going to know 100%. I would have a conversation with that dealer and say, you're really concerned.
Oh, I had.
Yeah, you probably have had more than one, right?
Oh, I had to argue. I had to. Well, it turned out to be an argument. That's why I went to Subaru and they straightened it out, you know, but I didn't ask for, you know, the engine to be pulled apart or anything. I'm just reading some stuff lately. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Here's an angle. And you might make this angle through Subaru corporate, not the dealership.
Right.
State your discontent and explain the whole situation and say, how would it work if you were to trade that car in on a new one? And if they can help you out with some bonuses, some incentives, some icing on the cake, and just get another car. And then the whole worry's over.
Good idea. Bob, thanks for the call. Gordon Fricke joins us today, 800-348-2551, the number. David in Burlington, Vermont. David, you're on.
Dr. Fricke, very, very happy to consult with you today about my problem.
I love it.
Thank you.
Calling from the People's Republic of Burlington.
I have a daughter that lives in Burlington.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So I've got a 2013 Subaru Outback wagon. And 3 weeks ago, car wouldn't start. So I called AAA. AAA came and they said, hey, that's one of our batteries. It's your lucky day. Here's a new battery. And they put a new battery in, tested everything.
Yep.
I drove it for a half hour, came home, stopped, turned the car off. And, of course, I wanted to check. So I turned the car on, started right up. Very next morning, I came out. Guess what? Dead car. Almost completely dead battery. So I called around. Make a long story short, I am presently in the parking lot of the dealer, and I have an appointment tomorrow. I've written them a nice note, and it says, you know, I'm interested to see if the car starts for you tomorrow morning. What do you think is draining my battery?
Yeah. Current draws can be really tricky to find nowadays because of all the electronics and all the modules that need to be kept alive. And years ago, you could do a current draw test pretty easily. But these cars now have to be allowed to have the modules go to sleep. And it takes about 45 minutes, I think, or so. So you have to have your test equipment connected to the car. And then you have to let everything do its thing where all the modules sleep. And then you do some circuit testing and hopefully you can find it. But obvious things are, of course, a light on in the glove box, the light in the cargo area. But you'd be seeing that stuff by now, you know, because it's dark so early.
I checked pretty carefully.
Yeah. There are components that can create big draws. Something goes wrong internally, and they can start drawing things down. The dealer may have experience with this. Maybe this car is not uncommon to have a current draw, and they'll want to search their database. The battery seems to have been ruled out by getting another one from AAA, so that's a good thing to cross off the list. But, yeah, they got to do some troubleshooting and hopefully arrive at that current draw. But they're tough to pin down nowadays.
David, thanks a lot for the call. We go to Saratoga Springs and John. John, you're up.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hello.
I have a question. Hello, are you there?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a 1500 Dodge Ram, and the ABS light came on. And it needs to be... I did some research about replacing them. When I have no problem. I feel comfortable doing that. But how do I diagnose if it's the right side or left side of the truck, the sensor that's gone bad?
Well, you really need to have a scan tool that does data, that reaches into the module and looks for the data so you can watch all the wheel speeds. And if you don't have one of those, it's really difficult to do. I mean, you can unhook each wheel speed sensor and probe the wires with an ohm meter. And if you catch one open circuit, you found the bad sensor. You could certainly do that. But getting a scan tool on there, you can bring the ABS module up and you can watch everything. You can watch things operate and valves, you know, open and shut. And you'll watch every wheel speed, and you'll look to see if there's a wheel dropping out or has zero signal. So those are really the only two ways.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
Sure.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke joins us today on Vox Pop. It's automotive maintenance and repair, and the number, if you have a question, is 800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Dennis is in Walden. Dennis.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, I have a 1992 Buick Roadmaster Estate Wagon.
Yes.
Last of the biggies.
Interior. Love that
car. Yeah.
Love that car.
I still get... I get 24 miles on a gallon on the road.
God bless you, man.
It's got leather. It's got every conceivable option. I'm approaching 200,000 miles, and the car's rust-free. And I'd like to know, economically, would I be better off putting a new engine in it? Since the tranny's redone, the front end and rear end, full suspension, all redone, brakes and everything have been redone over the last 2 years, I would like to put an engine in, and I think it's cheaper than trying to buy something that's not even comparable.
Sure. Yeah, no, those were great cars.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Last of the V8 rear drive.
Yes.
What did they say on the Mags movie? The last of the Interceptors, right? But no, that's a really a strong, long-lasting car. Is there anything wrong with the engine? I mean, you just want to freshen it up.
I'm starting to burn oil. I'm burning a quart about every 1,000 miles now.
Yep. You know, by today's standards, that's normal.
But it still runs great.
Yeah, that oil consumption today is so common that I know on that vehicle that probably wasn't that common. But I think if your power is still good,
it's great.
And you're only using a quart to 1,000, I don't think you need to rush into replacing the engine, to be honest with you. That was a really bulletproof engine.
Okay, and the only other thing going on there is I had to switch from 30 weight to 2050 in order to maintain oil pressure.
Well, so you can do two things there. You can confirm the oil pressure. Does your car have an oil pressure gauge in it?
Yes, it does.
Wow. So.
Yeah. It's totally analog, yeah. And it's got everything.
Yeah.
It may be that gauge has stopped being accurate, and you may have great oil pressure. You could confirm that. A shop could pretty easily do a manual oil pressure test on it.
So if the oil pressure is low, is he having some issue?
Well,
is it the head gasket or something?
No, that means that things are getting worn basically in the bearing department. The oil pump and all the bearings that it feeds are getting loose from that mileage. So it'd be nice to – so there's a few ways to determine if your engine's getting tired. Compression test, oil pressure test.
160 all around.
Yep. Do an oil pressure test with a manual gauge to confirm it.
Right.
The only thing that at that mileage that those V8s did eventually need are timing chains. I don't know if you've ever had that done or not.
Oh, that's been replaced already.
Yeah. I don't think you're ready to trash it yet.
Dennis, what color is that Roadmaster? What color is that car? Dark blue, right?
It's a dark gray.
Oh, yeah.
Metallic with a burgundy leather interior and a burgundy carpet.
There used to be a shop down in Mount Kisco where they sold those, and I was down there at that time, and I saw one and wanted to buy it. It was such a great car.
Yeah, they were.
Hang on to
it.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, okay, I've got to tell my wife that it's worth keeping now.
All right, well, thanks for the call. We'll take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back. We'll check the email bag with Gordon Fricke. Gordon Fricke is with us today, 800-348-2551, the number. I tell you what, Gordon, the stack of emails is pretty huge, so we'll try to get through these as quickly as we can and get back to the phones. This one's from Betty. Cold start misfire in 2012 Prius. Hello, the check engine light in my 2012 Prius came on. It took it to the Toyota dealer where all maintenance has been done since I bought the car. They told me the computer diagnosis read cold start misfire. Car felt fine while driving it. Dealer wants the car overnight, gave me a ride home. I'm checking this out on YouTube. I just had new spark plugs put in June at the dealer's recommendation when I had the oil changed. Car has 96,600 miles on it. What do you think needs to be done? And that's from Betty.
Yep. I always go back to this, Ray. Possible fuel deposits.
Okay.
Commonly overlooked. There's a lot of stuff that gets, quote, thrown at vehicles to try to help solve a misfire.
Yeah.
And cold misfires are a lot of times carbon buildup because the intake valves, and this is a non-direct injected engine, so the intake valves are globbed up with carbon. You start it cold, and the engine needs a lot of extra gasoline, and the carbon in the valve soaks up all that gas, and the engine stumbles and misfires, and once it warms up, the problem is gone.
Interesting. Okay, fair enough. This one is from Richard. My 2010 Outback, 210,000 miles, runs great. Just a lot of rattling noises on rough roads. No steering wobble. What should I consider replacing to resolve this?
Well, if he's referring to rattles when he's going through bumps.
Yep, rough roads.
Super common on a lot of cars, but particularly his, sway bar bushings, front and rear, and sway bar links,
yes,
front and
you
rear.
You don't mess with those.
They make a lot of noise. It's a wear and tear item, and it's a common problem on those vehicles. And it's not expensive to fix.
But it's important to have them working, right?
Yeah, it is. And when the links break, you don't lose control, but the car gets wobbly, and if the link breaks in the wrong way, they can potentially hit a tire, and then if you had a flat or a blowout, yeah, that'd be bad.
Okay.
You know?
This one is from Jay. My slight lunging... Okay, first of all, subject heading Equinox SUV. My slight lunging while idling in gear with noise was diagnosed as a manifold leak with a pricey replacement cost. In doing my research, I see that repairs can be done to at least get me through December's inspection. Can you comment on such a repair and how long welding it should take?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not uncommon on a four. I'm assuming this is a four-cylinder Chevy Equinox.
I don't know.
Yeah, they had a problem with the exhaust manifolds cracking and leaking, and they had some catalytic converter issues because the converter is bolted directly to the manifold.
Mm-hmm.
Good news is, depending how old his car is, that Chevrolet extended the warranty on that system quite nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how old his car is, but if it's
doesn't say.
I would check with a Chevrolet dealer just by chance if the extended warranty covers him.
Okay, and then the question really was, I misread this, how long would a welding repair last in your estimation?
I don't know if you can get in there to weld these because it's such a tight area. I've seen these. I know exactly what he's talking about, and okay. I don't know how easy it is to even get in there and weld those cracks up.
All right, this one's from Mark. Whenever I take my car in for tire rotation, the service advisors always ask me if I'd like to have my tires balanced. I remember tire balancing as something important back in the day, but is it still necessary? What's the danger of not getting your tires balanced?
Well, no danger, but a shimmy can be brought to your steering from the rear tires that you didn't know was there. So if the shop rotates the tires and doesn't check or balance at least the ones going on the front, you drive away, you go to 65 miles an hour, and the car's shaking like crazy, and you say, why didn't that shop balance my tires?
Okay.
So it's a shimmy. It's a All shimmy
right.
and a shake.
All right. Mary Lou says, I just want to say electric cars are affordable. I've never afforded myself a new car in my life. I'm in my 60s. I just bought my first new car, and it was in the mid-20,000 range. Plus, I got $1,100 back from the state and $4,500 back from the feds. Pretty reasonable for a brand new car. And I love it. And that's from Mary Lou in Olive Bridge.
I wish I knew what kind of car she bought for that kind of money.
Not too bad,
no.
Huh? Okay. Well, but hopefully it has four wheels, right?
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. One more email. We'll get back to the phones with Gordon Fricke. This one's from Jeffrey in Clintondale. I have a 2006 Volvo S40 2.1 automatic. The heater fan suddenly stopped working, replaced the 40-amp fuse, can hear a clicking noise when I turn the control. Is the fan motor dead? How hard is it to replace?
Yeah, possibly, but there's also a fan control module on that car that regulates the speed and all the current to the blower motor. So you could have a blower motor or a blower motor module problem.
Okay. And one more quick one. This is from Karen in Saratoga. How do you get pine tar from paint? There are pine tar spots on her car's hood. Different ideas online, but she would appreciate hearing from you the best way you would do it.
Really hot water, yep. Unless that pine tar has baked on there. If it's fairly fresh, which this time of the year it probably isn't, but if it's fairly fresh, hot water loosens it right up.
Okay.
And then soap, of course. They do make pine tar removers.
Oh, they do.
But you know what works is WD-40.
Ooh, would you put that on your car?
Yes, it doesn't hurt the paint.
Yeah, fair enough. Yep. Let's go back to the phones and Suzanne in Hinsdale. Suzanne, you're up.
Oh, hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Gordon.
Hi.
This is not like a mechanical question. I have a 2014 Toyota Corolla, and I noticed that when I would fill it up, my instrument panel would tell me I had like 464 miles in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
But these days when I'm filling it up, and this is just a few short months later, it's telling me I have 350. Why is that? Do I have a bladder for a gas tank, and is it contracted in the cooler weather?
Yeah, the car's aging. And
yeah, that's right. It's got to go to the bathroom three times a night.
So basically what you're saying is you fill it to the same amount. It takes the same amount of gallons.
Yes.
The gauge says you're dead full, but now it is saying that you have less range than you did prior.
Yes.
Okay. But the gauge is still pointing at the same full mark.
Yes.
Okay. Because the gauge, the only way the car can calculate your estimated miles left on your tank is what the reading in the tank is. And it just takes that information and calculates. So I don't think it's a problem with the tank or the unit in the tank. I got a feeling it's a problem with the calculation part that determines that. Because that's a big discrepancy, and it's all it's doing is measuring, you know, it's looking at the needle. Okay, I got half a tank. That tells the computer there's 12 gallons or whatever in there, and based on your normal economy, you can get so many miles out of that.
This is a dangerous idea, perhaps, and Suzanne, don't do anything until we run it by Gordon. But if Suzanne were to safely, with proper precautions, pull the power from the battery, and left it for 10, 15, 20 seconds, would it reset that computer?
It's possible that it can do that, and that won't harm the vehicle. You may have to reset a few things like your clock and maybe your radio station presets, but what Ray's doing is advising a power cycle like you do on your computer.
Like a hard reboot.
Yeah, you do it on your phone, you do it on your computer, your laptop. I do it about every other day with my state inspection machine. So you could do that, and you'd want to remove the negative cable and leave it removed for, it only takes a few minutes, but leave it off for 5 or 10 minutes. And there's a second feature that I can tell you to do, but you have to be really careful. And this will power down all of the capacitors and all the computers. And you may not want to do this, but you're going to link a wire from the removed negative cable, removed from the battery, and you're going to link it to the positive.
Yikes.
That sounds like a short circuit.
Sounds dangerous.
When the battery is connected, when the battery is completely disconnected out of the system, it offers the capacitors and the modules a full power down. So you may not want to do that, but that will...
Is this something I could tell my mechanic?
Yeah, sure you can.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I'd feel better about that.
He might be able to fix it, right?
Yeah. So he could power cycle that thing, take the negative off, loop the cables together, and do a full drain of all the modules, reconnect it, and just see if anything happens. You have nothing to lose but a little bit of time. It's not going to harm the car.
Right, but there's a lot. Remember, when you're dealing with batteries and anything like that, the car battery's got a lot of juice, and so you don't.
Oh, yes. Believe me, I'm not opening it up and doing that.
Yeah.
Just be careful and have somebody who knows what they're doing with
or,
you.
Or just do it at your next maintenance instead of making a separate appointment for that. Because, it'd be just out of curiosity. And I'd love to hear back because Ray's got computer input to things, you know, sometimes that you don't think about in a car, but a car is a rolling computer, you know?
Well, Suzanne.
Oh,
I'm right.
Great. I totally wasn't expecting all this.
Tell you what, Suzanne, if I'm right, call back. If not, just forget about it and come with another question next time. All right?
I'll send you an email and let you know how it goes.
Fair enough. Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to John in Catskill. John, you're on.
Hello, Ray.
Hello.
Hello, Ray and Gordon. Hi. I'm calling in from with 2007 Chevy Colorado.
It's the LT with the five-cylinder.
Yep.
And what I wanted to find out is I've had trouble with this passkey situation where sometimes I get in the car and go to turn it over and it cranks, but it won't start. And I have to walk away from it for like 10 minutes and come back and try it again. And then sometimes it will start. And I'm wondering if perhaps this is the body control module going on it. Car has 160,000 miles on it.
Well, the BCM, the body control module, does read the information from the key to initiate a non-theft start. Are you seeing when you're having it crank and no start, is your security light on or flashing during that period of time?
Yes, that and other lights seem to be coming on as well that I don't normally see.
Do you have another key? Have you already tried another key?
Yeah, I tried another key, and this all started in the first place when I would use the fobs, which I could typically click, like, you know, 15, 20 feet away from the truck.
Yep.
But it got to where only one fob would work if I took it right next to the driver's window and clicked it.
Yep. And the batteries in these fobs are new or fresh? You've changed them before?
Yeah, they're new.
Yeah. Yeah, those fobs can be checked for signal strength pretty easily. And there were some issues with those trucks regarding that system having to do with the BCM. And that would be probably a Chevrolet dealer area because it requires some pretty specialized equipment. But that could
right,
be...
Right, it's got to be programmed and such.
Yep, but you could definitely be having an issue there. That was not that uncommon on that vintage Colorado or other GMs.
Okay.
But, yeah, I think you've done all
right,
you can do.
And,
yeah.
But a dealership only, you think? Because I know some places do, you send your old BCM in and they'll clone it.
Yeah, I mean, you could also search out a shop, maybe an AC Delco or a shop that does a lot of GM work that has the factory equipment, and they certainly could go into that. That may not be totally dealer territory. Yeah, I would seek them
okay,
out.
Okay, brilliant.
Yeah. All right.
One other quick question. The speed sensors seem to go quite often on this truck.
The wheel speed sensors?
Yeah.
Yeah, what kills them oftentimes is rust. It strangles the sensors inside of where they're located in the front wheel hubs. So we replace a lot of hub assemblies with combined ABS problems because of the choked sensor from the rust. So I got a feeling that may be what you've been having happen there.
Okay, very good.
All right.
Great. Thank you, guys. Great show.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke, our guest today, and let's go to Saratoga. And Tony. Tony, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2012 Honda CRV, and recently it's making a very high-pitched whiny sound as I back up. And more recently, and now it does it going forward. It's not as loud, but it's still doing it both ways now. I'm wondering what that...
Can you tell what end of the car you're hearing it from? Is it in the back or is it in the front, middle?
It sounds like it's coming from the back.
But when it's going. Go ahead.
Somebody go ahead.
Well, it sounds like I'm in reverse, it's definitely coming from the back. And when I'm driving forward, it's not as loud, but that sounds like more towards the front.
At what speeds are you hearing this? Very slow?
Well, in reverse, this is backing out of my driveway. It's really slow. But going forward, I hear it faintly at higher speeds, you know, 40.
Yeah. A lot of miles on this vehicle?
Yeah, about 150.
Yeah. I mean, that's not severe for a CRV. Without getting ears on that, I don't know of any common problems that these have. The Honda-matic transmissions did make gear noise, and they had that whining reverse sound, almost like a manual transmission, but you would have been hearing that the whole life of the vehicle, not recently. So I think you might want to get somebody to listen to that when it occurs and narrow down the area of the car that it might be in, because I don't know if it's a differential issue or, you know, there's enough miles on there where there's some wear and tear. It could be other things. Could be many things.
Tony, thanks. Whoops. There's my microphone. Professional broadcaster. Thanks, Tony, for the call. Now we only have a couple of minutes left. Laura in Kinderhook. Laura.
Hi, I'm calling about my 2012 Subaru Impreza. I'm at about 202,000 miles, but I've replaced the wheel bearing twice, and I need to replace it again. Is there something that's continuing to wear out the wheel bearing?
Well, are you having to replace the same one every time? Or because the car has four of them. You're just going after one all these times?
Yes, the rear passenger.
Wow. So the rear wheel bearings on those cars, it's a pretty common failure. And when we replace them, we try our best to purchase and advise the customer to get the best quality. Do you know what you're getting for bearings? Do you know what brand or who's putting them in, what they are for bearings?
I honestly don't know. It costs me about $500 every time. I don't know.
It's a nasty job. It can be. Are these lasting beyond their warranty? Is that what's happening?
Yep.
Yeah, because we try to use a premium bearing that has a minimum of 3-year warranty and or a Subaru genuine bearing. So I don't know. If the same bearing is failing, it's possible that it's not of the best quality. How many miles are you getting out of these replacements? Like 50,000 or not even?
I would say about 40,000, 50,000 max.
Yeah. I would be questioning the quality of the bearing, the brand name and the quality of the bearing.
All right, Laura, thanks a lot. Final question, and you have 5 seconds. How do you explain to a teenager how to drive a standard transmission? That's from Nick.
Well, that's a great one because nobody drives standards anymore.
Yeah. You can't explain it. You
can't really
it.
Explain it. You got to have a stick car out there, and you've got to just hands-on feel it and try it and experience it.
Grind the gears, and it's awful. I mean, when you're sitting there and you let the kid do that, it can be a little stressful.
Kids have begged me to teach them how to drive a stick, and I still haven't done it. What's the matter with me?
Why don't you get them to do a column shift? That'll be more fun still.
I can't find any. I got one friend with a 50s pickup truck. That might be it.
There you go, man.
Yeah.
Support comes from State Street Fruit Store, Deli Wines and Spirits, downtown Northampton, a locally owned grocery and food specialty store, in-store home delivery and curbside pickup, 413-584-2301, statestreetfruit.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie presenting a new installation in the original art gallery featuring oil paintings by Winslow Homer and other American artists. ArkellMuseum.org. At Red Mannequin at 1 Main Street in Chatham, New York, a curated collection of clothing, accessories, and gifts designed by selected artisans, Krista Larson's, James Purse, Robin Kaplan, Crush Cashmere, redmannequin.com. Thanks to Gordon Fricke, thanks to Zach Malloy, thanks to Ed Rosen, thank you for listening. Tomorrow, another exciting show for you, which shall be a mystery unless you go to WAMC.org. Stand by now for another show.